This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Follow Justin's 90-day transformation from pudgy to ripped right here each week on Mind Pump. To get Justin's exact phased workout and diet plan, go to mindpumpradio.com. And click the big yellow button at the top of the page.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
All right, welcome to Mind Pump. This is the show that puts the testicle in fantastical. Does that work?
No,
I mean... You can't say that.
Well, it almost did.
Fantastical is different than fantastical.
I was going to take it in like rainbows and unicorn land, and then you compared it to testicles.
Jesus. Weird. What is wrong with me? All right, we're still going. I don't give a shit. You're listening to Sal DiStefano, Justin Andrews. You thought I was going to say your name.
Oh, I said
Adam Schaefer.
I was so ready right there. I was like,
wait a minute. You threw me off. You went me, then him.
It did.
Okay.
All right.
That's a new thing now.
And, yep. So we got the three of you.
Put you at the end, you
he
son
did.
Of a
he
bitch.
Just. Oh, yeah, but they'll remember me now.
Listen.
In the middle,
is that how it is?
They remember Sal because he intros. They forget about me because I'm in the middle, and then they remember you, dude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But now?
Okay. But now you're in the middle.
What's it like
I'm
to be?
I'm like the meat.
It like to be between Sal and I?
Well, you know what? That makes sense, though, because you're like the meat.
Just say, yeah.
We're the buns.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
This is horrible.
Dude, can we get to work here? Can we please get to work?
Yeah, let's get to work. All right, let's do a Q&A.
People are going to think we don't take this shit seriously.
Let's do another Q&A. No, let's get real serious right now.
Serious.
Serious. We're going to be really cereal at the moment here. Cereal.
I'm hungry.
All right, so
Q&A. Everybody loves some Q&A.
So we're going to start with the first question is from Saboob. 2032.
What was that extra emphasis there?
Sabboud 2032. He asks about, now he just got surgery for a femoral hernia. So for those of you that don't know what that is, so that's
ouch.
A hernia. That's a hernia. It's where your insides or your intestine kind of come out towards where your groin is.
Pushes its way down.
So something tore there and allowed the intestines to push through. So you have to get that operated on. You have to have surgery.
Right.
Sometimes they could sew it together. Sometimes they put Gore-Tex to kind of block that that area.
What's the healing time typically?
Well, with the hernia, for lifting weights can be a while. Now, yeah. Doctors will say between 4 to 6 months. Now, I have found if you train properly, you can get into the gym much sooner. And many times the recommendations that they give you are
on the cautious side for sure.
Super cautious. You know, they're like, don't lift anything over 20 pounds, you know, for the next
They don't want you to lift like barely anything, like 5 pounds.
Right.
They get ridiculous with
it. Right. And his question is, how is he going to get back into the groove after he's cleared for exercise?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say this, short of recommending that you work with a professional, because it will be some of the best money you invested in, is if you hire a trainer
yes.
who fully understands correctional exercise.
A good one.
Yes. I alluded to that too.
Did you say that on the thread?
Yeah. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So if hire a trainer that fully understands correctional exercise, because that's what you're going to want to focus on before you get into what you were doing before. Otherwise, if they repair the hernia, that area may be stronger. However, the area surrounding it may be weaker now because of either scar tissue or because of the way they might attach the you know whatever material they use to close that area up. So you can cause another hernia in a different area if you don't strengthen and correct, you know, basically do correctional exercise to prevent that in the future. So you're going to have issues with core stability, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because you can't brace your core. Because every time you brace your core, you kind of push a little bit, which is what you don't want to do when you just got hernia surgery. Probably right. really painful. A good exercise for that to start with is exercises where you brace yourself. Maybe like a modified plank. Instead of doing it off your toes, maybe doing it off your knees or having your elbows up on a bench.
Yeah, on a bench, it usually helps when you elevate your body a bit. Yeah, take some of the pressure off.
Floor bridges, huh?
Yeah, floor bridges.
Floor bridges, for sure. Get some hip extension.
I would say even just exercises where you're stabilizing your core while you're doing a really light curl, or let's say you're doing a standing chest press with the cables and you have to brace your core. You're using very, very little weight. You are working the chest and shoulders. It's not a muscle. It's not a huge mass builder. But it is going to it's going to retrain your muscle recruitment patterns, because what happens after an injury is your recruitment patterns change. So I'm going to give an example. I'm going to go away from the hernia because that's a little more complicated. But I'll use an example that most people can understand. So let's say I tore my bicep, okay, but I still need to use my arm to lift things.
Why don't you use like a knee, since very few people have torn their bicep. A lot of people have blown a knee out, or how about shoulder or knee? Can I get one of those two?
Yeah. So okay, let's say you hurt your knee.
I'm just sticking up for like at least 10,000 people that have never fucking tore a bicep, but they guarantee they've blown a knee or someone's blown.
Okay, so let's say you hurt your knee, and now but you're healing and you can walk now, but the knee is still healing. You're going to use more ankle flexion. You're going to use more hip extension to propel yourself, because your knee is not as strong as it used to be. And what happens is it teaches your body a brand new muscle recruitment pattern, and then it gets used to that recruitment pattern. So then later, when your knee is 100%, if you don't...
You have to relearn.
You have to train the new...
Properly activate it.
Exactly. Otherwise, you'll go back to doing your exercises, and now you've got this different recruitment pattern. And so a lot of correctional exercise is correcting... is changing those recruitment patterns to bring them back to where they're favorable again. So you're going to have to spend, depending on your how bad the injury was or how good you feel... between, I would say, 4 to maybe even longer, maybe up to 8 weeks of pure correctional exercise before you gradually move yourself up into harder exercise.
Yeah, this isn't something you're just going to jump right in and get back to squat and deadlift. And I think you mentioned like HIIT cardio and stuff like that. Like if you don't address these things in these little minute, correctional exercises and really like dive into that, you're going to experience more problems down the road, and this is just going to be a continuing pattern for you. So it's really important that you get in a different mindset towards the longevity of your program, as opposed to just getting back into how you want to get in shape and look better.
A couple things. One, because Sal was talking about neurologically and favorable, and I kind of want to dumb it down a little bit just to so it makes sense to the average person. We all get it, of course, but that may not make that much sense to somebody. So like Sal said, your knee's blown on your left side. That knee's all bad, whether it's been casted or torn ACL, MCL, whatever's going on with it, to where you pretty much couldn't, walk on it and utilize it. So what happens is our muscle atrophies. Part of what plays a role and your muscle atrophying is your body stops sending that signal like Sal was talking about. So let's just use hypothetical numbers, because this is how I explain this to somebody, is let's just pretend that your body sends 100 neurons per minute to those muscles normally. When they're fine, have no injury, and you're walking around to activate your legs, whether it be a squat, a leg press, whatever.
The number is 100.
Yeah, let's just say for hypothetical reasons, your brain or your body demands 100 neurons to fire that. Just like if you looked at your hand right now and you wiggled your fingers, okay, that doesn't just magically happen. Neurons are getting fired, and it's signaling and telling your body it needs to contract little tiny muscles inside your hands to move. Same thing works with like this leg. Now, when you get an injury, what happens is, let's say it goes from 100 neurons per minute and it drops all the way down to something crazy like 25, because now the body is rarely ever having to send a signal that way. And that becomes more important, is retraining the brain to send the signal than even lifting a heavy weight, which is what Sal was saying. So I'm just reiterating what he's saying, is that you should focus more on the stabilizing with that, the corrective exercises that are going to strengthen it, and that is that you're doing work. Even if you don't feel like it because you're not squatting or pushing all this heavy weight or whatever it is, or back to your normal self, you're making serious progress just by teaching your body or your brain to have to fire more neurons back over there. The second thing is that neither one of us touched on, or neither one of you guys touched on yet, but I think after what the three of us have recently found, not only by studying, but also applying to our own
Reclusion.
Programs. Yes. BFR would definitely be something. If you were a client of mine that I just now started, I feel confident enough to implement this into a rehab program, I would actually incorporate BFR training.
Yeah, which is super for hernia, but the knees
for this, for the hernia, I would say no, but like you for the example you're giving with the knee,
yes. I should have cleared that up, right? So somebody with an extremity they've had an injury, like the knee, the shoulder, things
yes,
like that.
Yes, absolutely.
This BFR is definitely something that I would try and incorporate for sure and help speed up that.
Well, it's just because, you know, you can train at a really low volume and get maximal result out of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's look at this next question here. Let's see. The next question is from Chris J. Keith. And the question is, is there a difference between proteins, like between whey protein, hemp protein, soy, casein, you know, all the different proteins that we see advertised in the magazines and online? Mm-hmm. Are they different? Of course they are. They're all from different yes. foods. Every one of them is going to tell you that they're all good for you. Well, the best one.
They're all going to be.
They're going to have their own camp established that, you know, and they're going to back, you know, supporting studies and.
Yeah.
This is why this is a very good question, though, because I'm sure this is why he's asking it, because you can pick up one magazine and it's and just remember what the magazine is. If it's, you know, Vegans Daily, they're going to be talking shit about whey protein.
Yeah, I was gonna say, are they going to even mention whey?
Yeah,
in that one?
You know, and they're going to be hyping up their soy and everything like that. So keep in mind where you're hearing this. And of course, our job on Mind Pump is always to kind of put all the information out there.
Keep everything in perspective.
Yeah. So where you're reading either the study or the information that gives you, keep in mind of where it's coming from, because they all there's great things about all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so typically for me with clients, it's normally a preference thing. So obviously, if I have someone that's allergic to dairy, I'm going to send one way. If I have someone who is a vegan, they're going to go one way. If I have somebody who they're not allergic to anything, nothing bothers them, I'm going to send them this way. So
and everybody, I mean, and like I kind of mentioned in a response back to me, like everybody's biochemically diverse. Like they're, you know, somebody's going to respond a little bit differently to a different type of protein too. So they might like have a better absorption. Like they're going to react, their stomachs can react, you know, differently to different proteins. So.
Right. And, you know, I'm sure you've probably read or heard that some proteins are better because they absorb faster than other proteins. And yes, if you take whey protein by itself, isolate, it's going to, you're going to reach a peak amino acid level faster than if you have casein. So what they've done with this is they've now said, okay, whey is for post-workout, and then also buy our casein so you can have it at night so that it's trickling in your bloodstream.
It's the slow absorption rate.
Okay. You're splitting so many hairs here that I can't even, my brain wants to blow out of my face. They're all going to be fine. Look,
Mind pump.
Look, a protein is a complete protein because it has all the amino acids necessary to be complete protein. Some proteins have a limiting amino acid. So what that basically means is if there's a low amount of one amino acid, then all of the amino acids are useful up until you get to that limiting point. So some proteins, they'll say, are inferior. For example, you'll hear people saying collagen hydrolysate is inferior, which is still false, because something like collagen hydrolysate, which is the protein from, you know, like all the, like basically from cartilage, tissue, organs, you know, they used to be what they would throw away or what they used to make cheap protein powders with. Those have health benefits. It's good for your joints. It's good for your skin. It's good for your hair. It's good for your gut. Whey protein, very high in the branched chain amino acids, also high in glutamine or glutamine peptides. So that's a good good protein for gut health. It's also a good protein for recovery. Soy protein, it's higher in arginine. We all know arginine helps with blood flow, right? But really, I mean, if it's a complete protein, go for it. Look, I don't take, the protein powder I take is vegan because I'm allergic to, or not allergic, but I have an intolerance to dairy. So I can't have anything with dairy in it.
There you go.
I don't have soy because it kind of bothers me also. Sometimes I have hemp and other times I have one that's kind of a blend of different proteins. And did I notice a difference when I switched? Yeah, I felt better because I don't have an intolerance to vegetable proteins.
Didn't reject.
There's a couple of things I normally tell a client is there's a couple of things I tell you to pay attention to. One, look at the actual amount of grams of protein you're getting, because that's the other big significant difference really between them, is your whey is typically going to probably be the highest per serving. Typically.
Concentrated.
Yeah, concentrated. Yeah. The most concentrated is going to be your whey. So you're going to get, you know, 24, anywhere between 20 to about 30 grams of protein per serving size. Soy is typically almost 50%, I'd say less than that, maybe 40, 50% less than that, if you guys back me up on that number.
I think so.
Hemp, I believe, comes in is similar to soy with that. And then casein is normally close to the whey. But like Sal said, you're splitting hairs when you're talking about the difference of slow timing versus fast timing. It just cracks me up when, you know, there's no reason for you to have two big-ass jugs on your refrigerator, both of two different types of proteins. It's just, it's silly to even go that. The next thing that I tell clients to look for is you'll get more benefits, I should say, by picking a company that's reputable and that regulates their supplements versus trying to save money and try all.
Right,
these
it's about things. The quality of yes. it, and like really, and a lot of times you got to pay for quality.
You do.
So I mean, that's something to consider because everybody's kind of looking for the deal. But you know, if you're really that detailed about what kind of protein you're going to take, you know, you're gonna want to look for something maybe that's a little bit higher
well,
price
let,
point.
Let's be clear: most of your protein should come from food. Period.
Well, yeah, obviously.
The benefit of protein powders are, A, if you can't get enough from food, which is rare, mm-hmm. most people can get enough protein from food, or B, it's super convenient post-workout. It's, you know, you don't necessarily want to bring a steak with you to the gym or, you know, chicken breast, right. So you have your protein powder. That being said, you know, we talk a lot about natural foods and how they're better than processed foods. Protein powder is about as processed as it gets. Yeah. That is food processed to shit and turned into a powder.
Yeah. Yes.
So look at things like artificial sweeteners. I guarantee you, 9 out of 10 of you that are listening right now, go grab your protein powder, look at the back. I guarantee you it's sweetened with either sucralose or aspartame.
Right, because otherwise it's just going to taste like chalk.
Right. So look at that. And you know, I know people are going to say, oh, those things are not that bad for you. Well, if you have think about how often you take a protein powder. If you take it every single day for years, do you really want to be taking sucralose and aspartame every single day for years? No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Look at, is it organic? You know, non-organic foods tend to have different residues on them, including glyphosate residues, which are what they spray all over GMO foods. So if you have soy protein, for example, get organic non-GMO soy. Otherwise, you're going to have these small, a little bit of glyphosate residues. Again, if you have it once, not a big deal. If you have it every single day, once or twice a day, can affect
it's gonna add up.
It can affect your body. I recommend whey protein to people who can have dairy, and I recommend that they get it from grass-fed organic cows, and that is a very good quality, healthy
protein. And usually, and you're going to find a lot of them from like New Zealand, right? Because they have a lot of programs for. Well, aren't they? They're pretty much all grass-fed.
I believe a lot of them do. Yeah, I believe they have a huge market there.
Yeah, that's where I get a lot of my protein
for that kind of stuff. Yeah, I take a vegan one. It's sweetened with stevia. It's got some probiotics in it, so it's relatively healthy. But you know how much I take every day? I might take a scoop in the morning, which is 16 grams, and I take a scoop post workout, which is another 16 grams. So I'm having a grand total every day of about 30 grams of protein powder. Which I know guys that 100 grams of their protein or 150 grams of protein comes from protein powder.
I don't even crazy. I don't even do that. Yesterday I had no protein. From a shake or bar or anything like that. It's for me, it's always my goal to get it from food. Mm-hmm. I look at it as an absolute. The only time you'll probably catch me doing that, one, if I'm seriously on the bulk and like and I'm trying to time my protein shake right afterwards and I slam a shake post meal workout and then I turn around and eat again 30 minutes later. But other than that, shakes and bars, a big old jug of Optimum Nutrition will last on my refrigerator for, you know, several months. And that's with me and my girl splitting it. So,
that's
the other thing that, and Sal just kind of said it, and I guess I'll just reiterate it again a little bit, is just that that's the next thing that I tell my clients is that, hey, it's your goal is to get this all through regular food. This is like emergency. You know, if we can't get it or we're struggling to get the protein up, then you're having a hard time eating the chicken, the, you know, fish, the whatever other things that are on your meal plan. You're struggling to get all that protein. Otherwise, it's so far more beneficial
just,
to get it.
It's
from.
Just the healthy way to approach it. You know,
mm-hmm. Well, and this, and I know this, and I don't want to get into the whole if it fits your macros debate again because we've already kind of talked about that. But this is going back to that, and it's hard not to point that out because I know that this is why a lot of these questions come out is because, you know, they don't discuss that. They don't talk about, you know, if it fits your macros. If it fits your macros, fits your macros. It's the same. You know,
calories,
you
go, calories, yeah, calories, a calorie.
Calories, and not it's true. Protein, it's protein. Yeah, no, you're.
You're not true. I think your best bet with protein is to have a wide variety. You know, sometimes have beef, sometimes have chicken, sometimes have fish. Sometimes get it from vegetable sources. You'll get a wide variety of amino acids, but you'll get all the other benefits from all those different foods.
Yeah, I always like to kind of rotate it around. Mm-hmm. So you're not just constantly, you know,
eating the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. We have time for another question, Douglas?
Yes, we do.
Beautiful. All right. Runs with Scissors, runs is spelled with a Z, with Scissors, ask us to review the low-fat vegan diets. So what do we think about low-fat vegan diets?
Well, I'm already not a fan.
Because well, two of my favorite things are missing from that diet.
I was going to say, I'm like, this is a foreign language.
Yeah, meat and fat are my two low favorite
things. Low-fat?
Yeah. Well, I could kind of get in. I could start off with it. Eating vegan, if you're smart about it. Here's the thing about eating vegan, like all diets. However, with vegan, you do need a little bit more education and knowledge in terms of what to eat and what not to eat. First and foremost, okay, I know a lot of vegans that eat a shitload of processed food. They buy the freaking the tofu burgers and tofu hot dogs and all these weird. You look at the back of the ingredients and there's like 8 million ingredients, and you've completely defeated.
Well, they need to satiate.
Yeah, well, you're defeated the purpose of your whole of eating vegan to be healthy. Mm. Unless you're eating now. And by the way, I want to say this straight up now. If you're vegan because you don't like killing animals, you don't like animals being killed, and you're eating them, I have nothing but all the respect in the world for you. I think being able to extend your empathy towards animals to that level is something that I think is pretty awesome. So I will respect people all day long who eat vegan, especially for those reasons right there. If someone tells me they eat vegan because it's the most healthy way to eat, then I'm going to debate you a little bit. Because there are health benefits to eating vegan, but there are some drawbacks to eating vegan. One of which, and she said, low fat, is the whole fat issue. And you can get saturated fats from, you know, vegetable sources like coconut and macadamia nut. However, they're not present as easily as they are when you eat meats. And you need those. You need those cholesterols. You need those saturated fats. They're good for
Where
you.
Where are the saturated fats coming from?
Primarily? Well, I've always had, I don't know about you guys, but that to me, that's someone who comes to me and they tell me that they're vegan like this. They're always the hardest person to write a program for because it is. Yes. It's
By
hard.
The way, how do you know someone's a vegan?
They'll tell you right away.
Yeah, right away they'll tell you. It's like the first thing they say. It's like they're really,
hey, I'm vegan.
Well, that's why I think it's hard to touch on this subject because it is a sensitive subject. I have for those that are like hardcore, you know, that they're it's like anything else, this cult-like thing because, you know what, like anything else, like Sal said, there's great benefits. This is something actually that I'm actually excited to start implementing into my program that I don't do. And I know Sal does this and he's the one who's given me the idea. I preach all day long about rotating this and changing up and confusing the body. One thing I haven't done because I do like meat and fat so much, I would have never thought to do a day or two of this, but what a great way to do that. Cause there are some great benefits to eating vegan. And I can handle it for a day or two in the month and a great way to kind of cleanse out.
So. Well, you know what I notice when I do that? So when I go vegan, I'll eat more frequently. And for the listeners that know, I typically will eat very infrequently. I'll eat like two meals a day. But when you eat vegan, because the calories tend to be much lower, I can't do that. I can't load up on a shitload of, you know, vegetables in one sitting because it's real uncomfortable. So I do tend to eat, you know, four or five times during that day. Number one. Number two, I will notice that I'll feel a little more flat. Like my muscles won't feel as full. However, the day after when I reintroduce meat, I get this like boost, anabolic boost.
Oh, I bet.
Now, the plus side, I'll tell you, is I feel my muscles and my joints especially feel so loose. They feel so, the inflammation is gone.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of the inflammatory fatty acids are found in animal fats. Arachidonic acid is one of them, for example, which you don't typically find in vegetables. And so you get this really, you get this anti-inflammatory effect. Now, I'll also add this caveat. Some of you guys with gut issues probably will not do well on a vegan diet. You need those fat-soluble vitamins and, you know, those really, really nutrient-dense, fat-soluble foods that you'll get from, you know, from animal meats or like bone broths and stuff like that. A vegan diet all the time for people with gut issues, in many cases, not all cases, because sometimes gut issues are due to meat, but in the cases where they're not, I would say vegan is probably not the way to go.
You're not going to see me on a vegan diet.
So I'm going to ask you both this.
You guys
so
can have fun with that one.
I'm going to ask you both this. If you are a healthy individual, you're not allergic to anything, and you're okay with cows being killed. What is your opinion on what would you rather be on yourself or put a client on? I mean,
No, listen, if you eat vegan because you think it's healthier, vegan is much healthier than the typical American diet. That's not saying much.
yeah, right. There's a lot of things not healthier.
That's not saying much. If you eat a well-balanced diet with animal fats and proteins, you're probably going to be better off. You're definitely going to be better off. There's certain nutrients. Look, vegans, a lot of them have to supplement with certain nutrients that they can't get from vegetables. But like I said, there's some that are very smart and they go out and they really combine. They have to think about it. They have to really think. It's well thought out what they eat and how they combine their foods.
Yeah.
As far as protein is concerned, of course, you're not, you know, you can supplement with lots of soy protein and stuff. Getting it from vegetable sources, your protein intake is going to be a little bit lower.
Isn't most, if not all, soy GMO?
Unless it specifically is organic, non-GMO, you're going to have GMO soy, definitely. Yeah. You bring up a great point because of what we're doing to our vegetable sources. People talk about our meat sources all the time. The same crazy shit that they're doing to our meat, they're doing to vegetables, if not on a higher level because, for example, it's illegal to inject certain things into cows nowadays, but they don't have those laws when it comes to certain pesticides and stuff that they're spraying all over your GMO plant. So,
and it's all about the presentation at the end of the day. It looks like in the supermarket.
It is. Yeah. So they're fucking with your vegetables too.
Oh yeah, broccoli does not naturally come the size of your fucking noggin. That's not natural.
No,
a head of broccoli is not the size of your noggin.
You ever grow things in your backyard and then you look at them, you're like, that doesn't look pretty like the one in the grocery store.
Tiny.
I bought some strawberries the other day. They were the size of apples, dude. Yeah. So I can't believe we've gotten to this level. Dude.
Yeah, no, no. So, but there are some health benefits. Definitely some health benefits to eating vegan. It will promote certain gut flora. It will replenish certain enzymes. I think unless you have an issue with animals, again, you know, killing animals and eating them, if it's for health purposes, you'd be better off rotating. You would be better off eating things like fish and animal meats and proteins and fats, and having a well thought out balanced diet. So I don't know if you guys want to add anything to that at all. Justin, you're not going to go vegan, huh?
No way, dude. Love me some meat. Sorry, everybody.
Perfect. All right.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.